Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. So glad you're able to join me today because I think we're going to be discussing some fascinating information that, well, every once in a while we hear about things like this on the History Channel. Maybe you like to study facts and information that are being discovered by archaeologists. Well, today, that's exactly what we're going to be into. What is that? Lost civilizations and secrets of the past. Well, my guest today is Micah, and this is a man, well, I'll tell you, he loves to explore the unusual, too. Micah Hanks is my guest. He is one of a group of authors that were brought together to discuss how to expose, uncover, and release information. Even some of it has been declassified. Yeah, yes. Governments like to hide secrets, as if we didn't know that. And Micah Hanks, I want to welcome you to the show.
Donna, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here. And, of course, you know, Happy New Year to everyone. 2012 is of course, the year that the world's supposed to end. So I'm glad that I got to be on your program with you and kick off 2012 with a bang.
Well, I'll be very disappointed if it does end, because I've got so many guests booked, I just can't afford that. So they'll have to put it off for at least, well, let's say 60 or 70 years. Anyway, Micah, you are a very interesting man. You love to do research, and your article was quite an interesting one in that you went into doing research on ancient nuclear weapons. And I'm not anywhere near the expert that you are, but I know that in India, there are ancient documents that every once in a while somebody would talk about and say, the people of India have recorded history with this. But you say it's Oppenheimer's Iron Thunderbolt. That's exactly how your chapter was titled. So what got you turned on to ancient nuclear energy and why?
Well, it's certainly a very interesting subject, highly controversial, and I'm certain that there will be people who hear this interview and who will roll their eyes and say Micah Hanks must be an absolute idiot. He's a lout. The reason for that is because obviously it is indeed a very controversial subject and a very bizarre idea to even propose. Again, what we might very carefully call nuclear events that could have occurred in ancient times. Now, in my article, not only do I assert that there is evidence for nuclear events in ancient times, I also look at the possibilities and some of the circumstantial evidence which is hauntingly similar, if nothing else, to a lot of the kind of circumstances that we find following the use of nuclear weapons in modern times, specifically following the blasts at Hiroshima and Nagasaki that ended World War II. Now, again, I'm pretty careful to word this, and I'll say nuclear events because a lot of the kinds of things that we see in ancient history, left in the not just the archaeological record, but also left as evidence, both found in the actual Earth itself and discovered through use of radiocarbon dating and things like that, and also evidence that has been kept, as you mentioned, in some ancient documentation, ancient scriptures, and ancient documents and things like that that have been kept and passed along for sometimes thousands of years. There does seem to be descriptions and evidence that supports the idea that there were, whatever the case may have been, for their cause and for their use or their occurrences, there were large explosions that indeed occurred, some of them dating back to Paleo-Indian times. So again, mm-hmm. I'm careful to use the expression nuclear events, but there are indeed some strange circumstances surrounding a lot of those, and of course they constitute some of these wonderful history mysteries that people enjoy hearing about so much.
Well, I am just totally fascinated with the way, because of technology, the way we are evolving in our understanding, there is a lot of stuff that went on thousands and thousands of years ago that historians of the past just said, oh, well, that's not possible. Everybody was living in a cave at such and such a time. And they're finding that's not the case. And, civilizations have disappeared because of volcanic eruptions, but the nuclear situation is just such an intriguing one. And I know that here in America, among the Native Americans, there were certain areas that were so highly radioactive that they may not have used the terminology as we have today, but they knew it was deadly to be there. And Mother Nature had produced this all on her own.
Oh, yeah.
But, it's really intriguing.
Well, when we get to the subject of Mother Nature producing things all on her own, the first thing that got me thinking about nuclear events in ancient times, aside from obvious references to what sound much like nuclear explosions described in the Bhagavad Gita and Mahabharata and some of the ancient Vedic texts of India, there are instances, and this is pretty wild in itself, even if you take things outside the ancient mystery angle, there are a few instances where natural nuclear fission reactors have occurred on mm-hmm. planet Earth. One example of this took place at a location in Gabon called Oklo. Okay, around 1972, there at Oklo, in a part of Africa, there was a physicist, I believe it was Francis Perrin was his name, where they'd found that there were remarkable conditions in which a kind of natural nuclear reactor had actually existed. Now, a lot of people have looked at this natural nuclear reactor, and they've said that, well, maybe this actually was an a case where in ancient times there had been an actual man-made nuclear reactor, and that perhaps, time and age kind of swallowed up all the remnants of mankind's involvement, and it appeared to be something that was natural. I don't know that a case can certainly be made with regard to that instance of nuclear fission reactors in ancient times being man-made. It certainly seems to be something natural to me, but it's interesting to point that out just because when you mention Mother Nature, there are circumstances, very unique circumstances, that occur only occasionally, but they have been recorded, at least as recently as 1972 with the discovery of the Oklo mines in Africa, that do show that this kind of thing can happen naturally. And then we also have these incredible events that occur, like the Tunguska blast of 1908 over part of what is modern-day Russia, in which there was this tremendous explosion. There have been incredible books written about that, including The Fire Came By, I think was one of them that I remember reading years and years ago. All of these things constituting, if not nuclear events, incredible large-scale explosions that have really caused people to kind of wonder what exactly was happening here. Could this really just be a meteorite striking the Earth that could cause an explosion with the devastation that was recorded at Tunguska, or was there indeed something else behind it? And so many people have speculated that there could have actually been something else going on, something a little deeper to the mystery, and even some speculation that lends itself to the idea of an alien connection to blasts such as those at Tunguska in 1908.
Now, J. Robert Oppenheimer,
mm-hmm.
This is a man that loved to delve into the unknown, but he also was a very intense researcher. And this is something you brought out, and he read a lot of ancient texts, the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita and some other ancient texts, and this is something that seemed to promote more of an awareness within him. So he was not unlike many researchers saying we stand on the shoulders of the giants that have gone before us, looking for clues in so many different ways that the average individual would not even give 5 seconds of consideration to because that's not their interest. But he really did a lot of work with this. Was he singled out for a reason?
That's a good question, because in truth, I think we could probably do a discussion solely on J. Robert Oppenheimer. That could be an entire show unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
Oppenheimer was certainly very well versed in, for instance, the Vedas and the ancient, traditional and religious holy texts of India. He was said to keep a copy of the Bhagavad Gita on the shelf by his desk. He also gave copies of it to people as a gift, and often even quoted passages from it, in public speaking engagements, and even at a funeral, at least on one occasion, which I mentioned in the article that appears in this latest Exposed, Uncovered, and Declassified anthology. Now, in terms of him being singled out, I don't know exactly, you know, if he was certainly singled out, whether that be by, who knows, the fates, or maybe even some clandestine governmental organization. But what is known is that he was a brilliant man. He was also, I think, nicknamed the father of atomic weaponry and various other similar nicknames because of his involvement with the Manhattan Project and that first test blast at Alamogordo prior to the use of nuclear weapons in wartime at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So it's very interesting that not only was there this connection with real-life governmental experimentation and then, of course, implementation of atomic weaponry in wartime that J. Robert Oppenheimer can be directly associated with, but there are also some rather curious and kind of clandestine things that kind of cause us to wonder what else Oppenheimer may have been involved with as well. One example was that, and this was first mentioned in a book called Doomsday 1999 AD, if I recall correctly, by Charles Berlitz. It was published in 1982, and he, among other things in this book, talked about how Oppenheimer, while speaking at Rochester University, had been asked if the blast at Alamogordo had been the first use of a nuclear weapon here on planet Earth. Now, according to Berlitz, Oppenheimer's response had been, well, yes, in modern times. And so people often wondered, well, in modern times, you know, what is that supposed to mean? There are references, however, to these large blasts, similar in nature and perhaps even more devastating to the aforementioned Tunguska blast that I spoke of. And these do occur in these ancient holy texts from India. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that Oppenheimer was well-versed in these and that he knew these like the back of his hand. We knew that he was involved in modern technology that created similar devastating atomic weaponry. Many believe that Oppenheimer didn't feel that we were actually on the cusp of new technology, but that humankind was actually exploring, learning, understanding, and recovering technology that had once been harnessed by other societies that existed here in ancient times on Earth. We can take it one step further, too. Of course, the infamous and very controversial Majestic 12 documents. Many have said that these, of course, are hoaxes. I think that there is some circumstantial evidence that clearly shows that there was something going on with regard to what we collectively call Majestic 12, you know, some sort of a secretive government oversight group that was looking into the UFO question following World War II. It is often said that J. Robert Oppenheimer was also a member of the Majestic 12 group. So he may have indeed had involvement that went well beyond merely helping produce nuclear weapons in modern times, and he always seemed very cryptically to kind of hint at that during interviews and things, often referencing the Bhagavad Gita and such documents while doing so.
I think that with documents that are being discovered, there are documents not just in India but also in China that are being found, that have all kinds of details where the people of today would say, oh, that's not possible. That just can't possibly be. These were people that were not all that savvy. They just didn't know everything, and that is not the case at all. And it seems like humankind goes through processes that, to put it in what I'd call Donna language, when they get too big for their britches and they decide that they know everything, they find that they messed everything up, so we have to go back to ground zero and start all over again. And in a lot of these ancient texts, they're discovering that people knew about chemicals. It was often very carefully protected. But the information that you have in your article in Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past really talks about some fascinating things like in the Indus River Valley. Mm-hmm. Tell us what happened there. It involved the cities of Harappa. Harappa. No, that's not right. Well, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, no, I believe you had it right the first time. Yeah, Harappa, and then, of course, Mohenjo-Daro, which famously translates to mean the city of the dead. Both of these ancient city sites, and this is the thing, I do want to preface this by saying that I think that it is fair to say that even some of the information that I present in my article, while it is accepted as fact, it is difficult indeed to trace a lot of this information. I want to make that very clear first and foremost, and part of the reason for that is because these city sites, these ancient city sites, especially Mohenjo-Daro, exist in modern-day Pakistan. In that part of the world, with all the political turmoil and things that are going on, it becomes very difficult, you know, for Westerners just to go and visit, you know, such a location and to really know exactly what may be going on there. But there are indeed some fairly credible references. I mentioned them in my essay, that refer to things like vitrified stone and vitrified clay found there at Mohenjo-Daro. Now, what I mean when I say vitrification or vitrified stone is stone or clay that has been heated instantaneously to a very, 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 very hot temperature that causes stone to fuse together. So, for instance, if you had a stone wall, the stones would be fused together as though they were a single piece of matter. Clay pots would melt, of course, and this often results in kind of a glassy substance, especially when sand is involved. And a name for that, in addition to being called trinitite, it's more commonly known as being called Alamogordo glass. And the reason for that, of course, being that the explosion at Alamogordo, which J. Robert Oppenheimer and many others witnessed, he nicknamed that Trinity. Hence the term trinitite, but of course that took place at Alamogordo, and so when they find this vitrified sand and stone, where you'll see literally that, you know, sand and stone and clay has been fused into a glass-like substance, they actually call it Alamogordo glass. This has been found in all different kinds of places throughout the ancient world, and of course Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa are believed to be sites where, very curiously, this kind of vitrification is known to occur. There are also little lumps of vitrified clay that are found around parts of the city, which many people say they seem to indicate that there were, you know, stone or rather clay pots and things like that that had been in various locations around the city that literally were melted very instantaneously, and now there are these little lumps, these little dark-colored lumps of the stone where these clay pots had once existed that are found all around the city. Alexander Gorbovsky was I believe he's actually a Russian munitions expert who wrote an article. He had a profound interest in this sort of thing, and back by the 1960s and 70s, I believe, had published a few articles that dealt with ancient mysteries at some of these city sites, and one of the things that that he pointed out had to do with the fact that there were also bodies, Pompeii-style, okay, and when I say that, I mean bodies that were found lying in the street as though something horrible and sudden had just overtaken them. Some of these bodies were lying side by side, holding hands as though they'd been struck dead very suddenly by a massive and sudden blast of some sort. And Gorbovsky also made the assertion that some of these bodies seems to have a much higher than average radioactive content. I think that, you know, there's what's called background radiation, and you're going to expect to find that in most circumstances. But some of these bodies and some of these locations around these ancient city sites indeed seem to boast a much higher level of radiation. Now, these things could, of course, mean a number of different things, but taken into consideration and into context, it's a little bit troubling when we start seeing vitrified stone, high levels of radiation at an ancient city site, and all these kinds of things that are remarkably, if not frighteningly, consistent with what we've seen at locations like Hiroshima and Nagasaki. These are things that we would expect at a known nuclear blast site, but when we find these kind of things in ancient city sites dating back thousands and thousands of years, that indeed becomes very troubling for the modern mind.
Yes, you make a comment about a layer of radioactive ash found in Rajasthan, India, and there's just so much that, because, again, of technology and the high incidence of particular diseases that are known to affect people around radioactive sites, various cancers and other things, and this is just one part of the world, but it is fascinating how so much of this goes on. Now, I know, Micah, that there are other articles in here, and one that was right at the very beginning of the book was dealing with archaeological scandals. And this section was written by Frank Josephs, and I know he's not with us, but this is so important, I think, because whenever people reach a point where they think, gee, we've got all the details, we've got all the information. I just love it when somebody says, excuse me, but last Wednesday we discovered mammoths that were frozen in ice, and I think they're about this age, and you know what? That's a long way back from where we thought they were. you know, time-wise. I just love it when things like this come up because it throws a monkey wrench into everybody's attitudes and perceptions. And I find it fascinating that we human beings want to compartmentalize everything and we want to have our absolutes. And by golly, this planet's been around for billions of years as far as I'm concerned. And it's really a hard task sometimes to get time frames. But archaeological research, you, Micah, you're involved with it to a degree. What's one of the greatest myths that you have researched that you're finding is being broken apart into smithereens?
One of the greatest myths. Well, I'll tell you, probably the first one that comes to mind is the idea that, you know, we were taught in schools, of course, you know, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, and essentially this was the introduction, the first introduction of the Western mind to the New World and, of course, to the Native Americans who existed here. It's pretty clear right now that as the evidence comes forth more and more over the years, there were a number of different kinds of contact between the North Americas and other parts of the world. In all likelihood, there were probably those of Nordic descent and you know, Vikings and the types you know, who were coming across the little island chains, you know, around Iceland, Greenland, and of course over into the upper parts of North America. There were probably Chinese who were coming across and who were landing in parts of California and the west coast of the North Americas prior to Columbus settling here. And then there are some even more curious instances of things that pop up, and this kind of leads into some of the forbidden archaeological descriptions of strange things, truly anomalous archaeological instances and happenings that have occurred in the United States. One of my favorite areas that involves this sort of thing is giant skeletons that are found throughout the United States. And this, to be honest with you, that discussion alone, had it not been for the intrigue that I found with discussing the potential for ancient nuclear events around the Americas and other parts of the world, because in the article, of course, not to get back on that subject, of course, we do talk about ancient city sites in the Indus Valley River area there, but I also mention a nuclear event, which I do believe was probably natural in origin, that occurred in the upper north parts of North America as well, around the Great Lakes region. So, but that said, had I not chosen that subject, probably in all likelihood what I would have written about for this Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past anthology would have had more to do with these curious reports of giant skeletons that have been recovered in different parts of the United States, which there is indeed a very credible, kind of, yet it's very sordid and kind of covered up, but there is indeed a very credible basis for this in the historical record. It dates back to the 1890s. The Smithsonian Institution was very involved with the excavation of different burial mounds of Native American tribes and things throughout much of the eastern United States, parts of Ohio, and, you know, as far south as Tennessee, or maybe even probably as far south as Florida, to be honest with you. But in any case, there were a number of instances where at these burial mounds and other sites that they'd recovered Smithsonian workers and people, you know, archaeologists who were going out and recording field data that was reported back to the Smithsonian in the annual reports, they were uncovering large skeletons that were anywhere from maybe 7 feet tall to as much as 9 or 10 feet tall. In at least one instance, there was a report of one of these skeletons being entirely clad, get this, in what looked like Western-style medieval armor and buried alongside weaponry and maybe even a hand mirror or something along those lines. So, you know, there were curious instances where there were strange artifacts turning up next to very, very large proportioned skeletons. Now, you don't hear about this a whole lot in the history books. And in fact, one of the few references I did find to this in a more conventional history book chalked it up to being that, well, over time, as the bones, of course, were displaced somewhat through erosion and through the soil moving over time around them, and of course, you know, the bones become, you know, separated and they move farther and farther apart, then it gives the impression of an elongated body lying in the grave. But the other thing, too, is that even in more recent times, these kinds of remains have popped up. I remember Brad Steiger telling me in an email exchange a few years ago, because this was a favorite subject of mine and always has been. Brad was always very generous in sharing that kind of information with me. And he talked about how he had been sent photographs that were kept in personal, you know, private collections of people, even as recently as the 1960s and 70s, that included very large skeletons. One instance was a very large skeleton of a woman who was cradling an infant. And that when he began to write about some of these things in books of his own, that some of these collections, these private collections, began to disappear rather mysteriously. And so a lot of people, even the late Ivan Sanderson, who wrote about these things, often asked, what is it? Is it the Smithsonian Institute, or is it some other organization that is so protective of this sort of information that they have to literally hide it, spirit it away, you know, hide the evidence in some sort of a, you know, some clandestine warehouse or something like you'd see in an Indiana Jones movie, and then rewrite the history books to try and compensate for the fact that we cannot explain elements of our own history. And that's right here in the United States. So, indeed, those aspects, I think the lid is being blown off of those kind of things because of researchers like those who appear in this book. And like you'd mentioned, you know, the first chapter in this latest anthology, Mr. Frank Joseph's Archaeological Scandals, it helps to kind of bring those things to people's attention. And those are always some of my very favorite subjects, Donna.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's marvelous because there are so many things in museums. I know of some particular instances where I've had conversations with people that had museums in local communities. They had items, artifacts, they really didn't know anything about them, and they were tucked away in a drawer. And nobody even paid any attention because nobody had the interest. Now, they protected it, and they made sure that it was in its right kind of environment most of the time. But it's absolutely fascinating. I wonder what it would be like if archaeological students could be let loose in the bowels of these various museums that have been cordoned off, and people say, no, we don't go in there anymore, because a lot of the people that did know what was there, they're not around anymore. And if had the opportunity to go in and research, really catalog it, explore it with what we are aware of today, wow, would history be in for a big adjustment? And maybe that's the challenge. People say, gee whiz, do you know how many books we'd have to correct? Libraries would have to empty themselves of old records. And my goodness, we'd have to do different advertising here. Who cares? Let's bring it out. I think it's marvelous.
Well, I agree with you 100% in that capacity. And I'll tell you something else also, that, you know, right now, I know of individuals personally who I've spoken with who say that on very, very seldom occasions, they've been allowed into places. For instance, I think one of them actually been a student who had been attending it wasn't Western Carolina, it was Appalachian State University right here in Western North Carolina where I exist, where I still exist, yes. But I'm glad to be existing. Of course, after 2012, I won't exist here any longer. You know,
Oh, yes, you will. You can't go away.
I'm right there with you, Donna. I think that 2012, it's going to be a great opportunity, and I don't think that the minds really meant that the world was going to end. I think it's going to be such a great opportunity for those of us who are of like mind in this capacity that, really, to be honest with you, Scotty Roberts, who's the author of a new book coming out about the rise and fall of the Nephilim, he and I, he's also editor and publisher of Intrepid Magazine, but he and I are going to work together to put on a fantastic event in October in Minneapolis this year called the Paradigm Symposium. That's how excited we are about the world not ending. So just to drop a little Easter egg there for you, but getting back to what we were talking about, I do know of at least one student who's told me that while she was studying archaeology, she made a field trip to the, I guess it was the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., and being a student and having a professor with her, they were allowed access to some of the areas where records are kept and you know, where certain things are filed away, I guess, and of course the public is not allowed into this kind of area. They were back there for purposes of research, but she said at one point one of the curators came back there, and despite the fact that they were accompanied, you know, by a chaperone of sorts, by a professor, she said that this, you know, this curator had been very miffed at the fact that these students had been allowed back there. And she said, I'm sorry, no one is allowed back here in this area. You're not allowed to go through these records, that no one's supposed to even be back here and see this. I'm sorry, you're going to have to all leave. And she said it was so strange because she'd been in many such institutions, and of course, given the nature of their reason for being there and their involvement in education, she'd never had a problem. And for some reason, the Smithsonian had been very protective of whatever it was that they were back there and in close mm-hmm. proximity to. Which brings to mind something that happened recently, which kind of makes me question, well, since we don't have regular access, and those who are given even, you know, sparse access to such records and such areas within these institutions, they seem to be kind of hushed away and spirited along and told, don't look too long, don't linger, you know, there's nothing to see here. Recently, Lauren Coleman sent an email out to a lot of folks in his email list, and of course, I've been interested in cryptozoology for a number of years, which kind of ties in with the idea of large skeletons, and he had done an update at cryptomundo.com with regard to this infamous and famous Yeti finger that was removed back during the Tom Slick expeditions into parts of the Himalayas back, mm-hmm. probably dates back to the 1950s. I think the actor Jimmy Stewart had actually worked with cryptozoologist Peter Byrne to get a portion of this finger out of this monastery and back to the United States where tests could be performed. Now, back then, the tests, of course, were somewhat inconclusive because our technology didn't allow for the kind of DNA printing that we can do in the modern era. But you know what's funny is that this portion of what was proposed to be a Yeti finger disappeared for decades. No mm-hmm. one knew what happened to it. Where did it end up being found? It ended up being found in one of these museums. It had been set aside in a drawer someplace and long forgotten. And then after being rediscovered, new tests show that it was actually, in all likelihood, nothing more than the finger of a very large human being. But the point is that just like in that instance, Donna, you know, how much more is kept in these, you know, institutions and these museums and things and locked away and forgotten and furthermore kept in areas where people, especially the public and researchers like you and I, wouldn't be allowed anyway? How do we know what actually is back there? There could indeed be evidence of things that would really rewrite the history books. And I do feel sometimes that certain people don't want that information to get out.
I agree with you. Micah, we're out of time. This has been wonderful. And when you come out with your new book, you're going to have to send it to me. Now, what's the website people can go to find out more about you? I know this is available on Amazon, Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past. It's exposed, uncovered, and declassified information. Micah, where can they go to find out more about you and your research?
Well, to find out more about me and my research, you can visit my website, The Graalien Report, and that's www.graalien. It's like G-R and then the word alien, graalienreport.com. We've actually got a link right there at the website where people can click on that, and it'll take them to the New Page Books website where they can purchase the new Exposed, Uncovered, and Declassified Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past. And while they're there at the New Page site, I have to recommend the other two anthologies, too, because there's actually three of them that I have anthology appearances in that all came out just this past year. One of them has to do with ghosts and hauntings. One of them also has to do with UFOs. And then, of course, this Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past. So I've got a little snippet in each one of these anthologies, and they were gracious enough to publish these essays. I think folks would enjoy those just as well. And you can also contact me there at graalienreport.com if you have further questions. So, Donna, thank you so much for having me on tonight.
Oh, it's been delightful. Micah Hanks, one of the many authors that contributed to this marvelous book called Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past. Check it out. If you're one of these people that like to keep up with the latest discoveries, I think this will fascinate you. Donna Sebo here. We are taking a break for just a moment. We'll be back with more good things to share with you in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back, and our telephone lines are open, and if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do exactly that. Here's the toll-free number you can call into, which is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Oh, by the way, if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then, of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. And then after that, just let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that may be of significance to you. Now, we have got a guest tomorrow, Naked in the Nursing Home, and this is a subject that Harold Lustig has taken on that I think is very, very important. In today's world, we have so many people that are living so much longer. I was in a meeting with a professional associate yesterday. We were discussing situations that were in her family and the issue of assisted living, hospice care. We covered a number of different subjects, which is going to come up when you have elderly people in your family that need care, and you may or may not be able to assist them and the variables that go along with that. So Harold has done a wonderful job, and I really think that this is such valid information, and he really brings up some excellent points that I think can assist just about anyone. And then next week, we've got a wonderful lineup of people. Do you have a challenge with negotiation? I know I have had many, many times, and it's something that can make us extremely uncomfortable. Well, we're going to have a gentleman on Monday, Jim Camp. We're going to be discussing the subject of how to work with negotiation and a magical word of two letters, no. That's right. This is an outstanding publication. Then we're going to be talking with Beverly Factor on Tuesday. She is a professional photographer. Her underwater work is absolutely incredible, and she's put together a book titled Angelie, Dealing with the Environment, and has used photography in a wonderful way. It's a book that adults enjoy because of its visual beauty, and kids do too. And then Susan Weed. This is a woman that has really gone and done the homework regarding how we can keep our sexual organs healthy, both for men as well as for women. She goes into natural aspects for healing and wellness, and her book is titled Down There. She is very, very well educated regarding this subject, and her information is valuable. Then we've got Getting Totally Real. Now, this is about planning with kids, life planning for the 21st century. And then, well, I have to tell you, one of my favorite actors was Gary Cooper. Yes, I always enjoyed. In fact, I remember seeing a movie by him. Oh, my goodness. I don't know when it was made. I happened to see it late at night, and it was an old movie. And I was just mesmerized by him because he just had this particular magic on the screen, even when he was quite young and got into show business. Well, his daughter, Maria Cooper Janice, is going to be with me a week from tomorrow, we're going to be talking about her dad because she has come out with the most elegant book about Gary Cooper, Enduring Style. So we got a marvelous, marvelous lineup. So be sure you check it on show information. And let's go to our first caller of the day. And caller, thank you for being so patient and waiting. Welcome. What's your first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Okay, my name is Julie, and I'm calling in from Connecticut.
Okay, Julie, where are you in Connecticut?
I beg your pardon?
Where are you located in Connecticut?
Oh, got it. I'm in Westport.
In Westport. Well, so glad you're able to join us. Okay, first thing I am looking at here is the word organization, making a plan, then the follow-through, and follow-through, and follow-through. So whatever is going on in your life, you really have to get down to what I call to the bare bones. And don't add any fluff to your plan. You deal with the directives. It's sort of like handling taxes. You know that you're going to have to take care of them by the 14th, 15th of April. So you start doing your bookkeeping, you get it done, you don't let anything detract you from what you need or distract you from what you need to do, and you just know that you have a certain time frame and you want it done maybe by March 15th to get into your tax person, and so you do what you have to do and you are consistent. That's the same application. I know none of us like to refer to taxes, but I think it's a good analogy. So I want you to be aware. It is that kind of focus, that kind of discipline, that kind of follow-through. And I mentioned the word follow-through three times because it's
right.
Not just one follow-through. It's like I do that once, I have to do it a second time, and I have to do it a third time. So the consistency and the thoroughness is absolutely necessary. And by the way, after June the 15th, you're going to find that if you are holding true to what your objectives are, you really are going to have a clean slate by the time June 15th comes into picture. So whatever your agenda is, whatever you must take care of at this time, focus, be disciplined, get it done.
All right.
Okay?
All right. Yep.
That's going to give you
a question.
You sure can.
Okay. I have a new boss, and I'm sort of confused by our relationship. I'm not sure what's going on there, and I'm just wondering what you pick up. Is everything okay, or is there a problem, or like what?
Well, how new is the boss? How new is the boss?
I've known her for a while in this organization, but she's been my boss now for, maybe like a month or two.
Okay. Was she recently promoted to this new position? In other words, was she brought in that month or two ago, or has she held this position and then you were just put under her?
They're doing a reorganization, and I was just put under her.
All right.
And there seems to be confusion. At least I'm confused with her behavior. I don't understand. So,
well, I'll tell you what.
For clarity.
I think she feels like she is on overwhelm. And what you have here is a situation that's going to take some patience to work through. And she is feeling overwhelmed because the reorganization is going on without a lot of clarity of thought being given to those people in the management position. And they're very concerned with the reorganization that their positions are going to be eliminated eventually. I don't know what kind of company that you are working for, but there is some new technology applications that are coming in that are actually going to be eliminating some of the positions within the company structure. So So I don't think that the people that are making the decisions, I think they've got the bigger picture, but they don't know how to work with the details in what I describe as an effective manner, educating their staff first so that the employees can have some clarity. Am I making sense to you?
Can I ask you? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just wondering, is she liking me or is she having a problem with me?
I don't think it's either one of these questions. I don't think that it's a matter of her liking you. I think that there is a level of confusion on her part. So what I'd like to encourage you to do, first of all, she's your boss. No matter what kind of a working relationship you have had before, you were not under her supervision before. This automatically changes the communication interaction, automatically changes that interaction. So you need to understand this, step away from, gee whiz, maybe she doesn't like me anymore. Don't even go there. What you need to do, and I think it's directly related to what I gave you in the beginning. You need to be
right.
able to look at the facts, get the emotional stuff out of the way, no fluff stuff. Have clarity, and if you're confused about something, let's say she wants you to do something that has just not been in your environment before, what I would say is, I appreciate your asking me to do this. Can you give me the understanding of why this is, how this goes and flows with the other? I'd really like to have a clearer picture. Don't try to be a friend in the sense of being buddy-buddy. This is a job. She's got a lot on her plate. She is on overwhelm. So what you need to do is look at your positioning differently without, you know, we can't go into a lot of details on the air, but it's something you have to have some clarity here with yourself. You're doing a job, and you need to be sure that you learn how she communicates in the positioning she is with you and in the positioning you're in under her.
Okay.
All right, so it's a different type of thinking that you're having to learn. And it
right.
doesn't make her a bad person. She's not a bad person.
No. No, I've been very confused by our conversations, and it's been making me feel very uncomfortable, and they've been unclear, and it just felt very passive-aggressive, to tell you the truth. And
well, you're naturally going to have that reaction, hon. That's a very normal, natural reaction on your part. So understand, yes, it's a very natural reaction because it's out of your comfort zone. It's different. So you're
right.
trying to learn and you're having to educate yourself. I've got to go. I've got to go on break.
Okay. Yes,
all right,
yes.
But I'm so glad
Thank you
called in.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I hope it helped
Bye-bye.
You, dear. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a minute, and we'll come back with some things to share with you.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you. We offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, before I share with you the final 3 months of the astrological horoscope for 2012, I do want to remind those of you that are listening in Western Washington, two very special events coming up, both of which I'm obviously participating in. On the 21st of January, Saturday, from 7 until 9 p.m., there is a marvelous event to kick off the year 2012 being held at the Ascension in the Light Foundation in Seattle, Washington. The address is 1222 South Weller Street. Their phone number is 206-356-6356. I, along with three other women, will be presenting a program, and I will also be doing mind demonstrations. And this is going to be for the 2 hours. It's going to be very upbeat and insightful, and I hope that you'll come out. There's a small fee of $20 per person coming to the event, so do plan that. Put that on your calendar for Saturday evening, the 21st, and then on the 28th. I am so excited about this. Saturday, the 28th, from 10 until 4, Quantum Mind 2 is going to be presented, and we just are going to have a fabulous time. I'm again going to be doing a presentation with Robert Newman. He is a feng shui master, and we're going to be talking about the money frog, all kinds of things, and he's going to be doing the first half of the class. I'll be doing the second half of the class. It's at Bridgeport Place, the same location we used for the class in November. And we are limited to 25 students because this is a very interactive class. So do tell your friends, come along. We still have some spaces open. I'd love to have you there. Food is and refreshments of different types will be served. It is going to be an awesome day. It is a wonderful way to be able to empower yourself for 2012. If you want to put your reservation in, contact me at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. This class is going to be in University Place, which is next door to Lakewood, Washington. Okay, I promised you I'd finish up these zodiac. Yes, okay. The last three signs that we have not yet covered for 2012 is Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. So let's start with Pisces. Well, you know what? You are really going to be up front and really in the face of what you want to achieve. You're going to be going after what you want. And one of the things you're going to find very valuable is what I call mending fences. Yes. That means that there may have been some associations, could be business or personal, that have given you some challenges, but you're going to sort of smooth the surface so that it's no longer going to be an agitation and aggravation to you. When it comes to success and money, I think you're going to really do well because your focus is going to be so clear. And especially after the 5th of October, you're going to find that your money situation is going to be very good. So if you're having to budget tightly, keep with the plan because the results are going to be very positive by fall of this year, and you're going to make good money. It looks like you have an opportunity to make good money, so manage it, work with it well, and you will not be an unhappy camper. And what if you want to have certain dreams come into place? Go and get that education. Whatever you need, read. Attend classes, seminars, conferences. Put yourself in environments that are going to just totally support you in your progression as an individual. Also, those under the sign of Aquarius, when it comes to relationships, well, I think you're going to have to really pay attention. You're going to have to wake up, pay attention, and not to assume everything's intellectual, folks. Okay, if you're under the sign of Aquarius, you need to be really more socially active. When it comes to success and money, you are really going to find that things seem to flow well for you this year because you're putting your best self forward. You're putting your best self forward. Now, if you have a dream of going on a cruise, doing something unique, put it up in front of you on a vision board so you can look at it. And don't worry about how it's going to come about because it is going to come to you and you're going to be feeling so good about how things are coming together. I think the last few years might have been rather stressful for you. You're getting past it. Now, for those of you born under the sign of Capricorn, well, I got news for you. Domestic home front. Really going to be sweet, sweet, sweet. And you're going to find that all of your burdens, all of the things that you have worked so hard towards are finally coming together. You Capricorns, you little goats, you always have that tenacity of jumping from one difficult spot to another and keeping your balance. Well, by golly, you're not only going to get to the top of the mountain, but you're going to know how to zip up and go down very quickly and easily. Success, you're going to get the rewards. You really, really are. And expect especially positive things starting around the month of August and moving forward. And you know what? If you want to, compete in contests because you have a good chance of winning, again, because of your commitment and dedication. My goodness, how did time go by so fast? This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted you were with me. Tomorrow, join me again. We've got more good stuff to share with you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Thank you for being with me today. Talk to you tomorrow. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.